Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What is up, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty on a Wednesday night. That's right. We're still delivering our Thursday show earlier because we have that luxury right now, doing the show from home as opposed to Mandalay Bay, doing the show in podcast format. However, we will deliver some video for you because we have a guest today. It's Michael Rosenthal from Boxing Junkie. He will be our guest to start off the show. We're going to talk about the big boxing matches that are coming up involving Vitor Belfort versus Evander Holyfield. Yep, De La Hoya's out. Holyfield's in. We covered that last week, but some of you may not have heard that. We'll talk about that, and let's not forget Anderson Silva versus Tito Ortiz. Dana White's contender series last night. That was cool. Five more contracts headed your way, and of course, we'll start an early preview for the upcoming UFC cards, Bellator cards that kick off next week as we're MMA free this week. So give us 10 seconds. We'll be right back starting the show with our colleague, Michael Rosenthal from Boxing Junkie. And we're back. What's going on, Michael? How you doing? Welcome back to MMA Junkie Radio.
I'm doing great. Great to be with you guys.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for coming back. Hopefully we can kind of make this a little bit of a tradition when we have some of these big boxing matches, at least the ones that kind of sort of bleed over into MMA and have some sort of an MMA appeal because, hey, let's face it, boxing is popping pretty much every weekend. I keep an eye on it as much as I can, but this one, like we stated, has an MMA twist to it. We have MMA former UFC champion Vitor Belfort. He was going to sling him against Oscar De La Hoya. That's no longer happening. Now it's Evander Holyfield. Does your head explode at what's happening between this hybrid sport, this crazy stuff? Are you enjoying it at all? I mean, I know you're more of a purist.
Well, it's interesting that you said that we're going to do this maybe more often because of the overlap between MMA and boxing. It's just interesting. They were so separate for such a long time, and now they're sort of blending together. I'm not sure I really saw it happening. I find the fights at least mildly, you know, entertaining. I guess I can say that about a lot of boxing matches, too. They're not all entertaining. So I think it's interesting. I like to see it.
Okay. De La Hoya was going to be the opponent for Vitor Belfort. So we had a 49-year-old against the 45-year-old, a 49-year-old that hadn't fought in over a decade versus a 45-year-old that kind of has a boxing background, but in no way would we say he's a professional boxer. But yet maybe things evened out because he's actually competed as of 3 years ago, whereas, again, De La Hoya, I believe, the Pacquiao fight, he quit on the stool, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But yeah. Now, even that's now a whole different ballgame. He's out, and Holyfield, who's going to be 59 soon, he's in. What do you make of this? Does this make sense to you, or are they rushing Holyfield into something he shouldn't be doing?
I think from a business standpoint, it makes sense. You know, Holyfield was preparing for this for quite a long time. He was hoping to fight Tyson, and then he had blanking on who he was supposed to fight. He was supposed to fight somebody else coming up, and that didn't happen. And so he was just waiting in the wings. And when Oscar went down with COVID, boom, he was there and ready to go. The thing that strikes me is it's such a radically different fight for Belfort. You know, De La Hoya is basically a small guy compared to Belfort, and it's obviously the opposite with Holyfield. And then you have the age differences, so it's really a radically different fight.
Right. You know, we use the headline Holyfield labors through workout because they had their open workouts. Was that fair, or was that kind of what we should have expected from a 59-year-old?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up because I just wrote a column on that. My gut reaction to that was probably don't read too much into it. Maybe he's just going through the motions for the camera, that kind of thing. You can never say because a guy looks a certain way hitting the mitts, he's going to look a certain way in the fight. Holyfield's the kind of guy who was always in shape, super incredible boxing intellect. His boxing acumen is just through the roof, tons of experience. I think he's going to be fine, but a little part of me sort of wonders. You know, you see something like that, he looks kind of slow. Maybe his reflexes aren't what they used to be, and he's almost 60 years old. A little part of me is worried because the guy's a legend. He's like one of my favorite fighters of all time, and he's an all-time great. So I don't think it's a problem, but I'm a little worried.
Michael, you're absolutely right. When we think about the matchup, boy, is it night and day, this change. But do you feel like it's a benefit towards Vitor Belfort, or did he actually take a step up? Could this be even more difficult for him?
Honestly, I think he's going to lose either way. I think Oscar was going to be too quick for him. You know, I'm not sure that Oscar's anywhere near as quick as he used to be. He'd be a lot quicker than Belfort. And even though this is a different fight, I think it's going to be the same kind of thing. I just think Evander has got this boxing, you know, background. The way I wrote it is I think that his muscle memory alone could probably beat Belfort. But who knows? Again, the guy's almost 60 years old. Maybe an old man walks into the ring. I can't know for sure. But if that's not going to happen to anybody, it's not going to happen to Holyfield, because he always really took care of himself and always stayed fit. So I think he's going to pull it off.
So having the benefit of knowing your stance here, that Evander Holyfield, you believe, will probably win, do you feel like a full training camp, knowing ahead of time what was going to happen, how much different do you think that fight would be? Like, would Evander completely steamroll him?
I think he still might steamroll him. I think basically he could do what he wants to do. With that little part of me that's a little bit worried. But I think that he's just got too much experience. Plus, he's a lot bigger than Belfort. That's another factor. So I don't think a camp would have made any difference. I'm not sure that Holyfield would even commit to a camp at this stage of the game. I think that he always stays relatively fit. I think he was gearing up for something like this anyway. So I think his mind's probably in an okay place. So I think he's okay. I just hope I'm right. That's the thing.
So back when Anderson Silva beat Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., a lot of guys on our end took sort of a little bit of a victory lap, because we were used to being on the bad side of these. And maybe I could vouch for George, but we kind of weren't those guys just because we knew Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.'s background, and sometimes he just didn't show up to things. And I didn't think it would really go down that way with Anderson Silva. That being said, if the shoe were on the other foot and it was Vitor Belfort who was out of the fight and Anderson Silva decided to step in, would that make the matchup any different for Oscar De La Hoya, had that happened?
I have to plead ignorance a little bit. What does Silva walk around at, like right around now?
I'd say right around now.
So how much, sorry?
I would say about 210. And he used to cut to 185 to fight middleweight. So, you know, being that he's not as active, I would say 210. You know, he probably cuts to what? Cruiserweight, I think, is 190, right? So,
it's 200. But, yeah, they did 190 for that fight. I don't know. I still think it's a tough fight with Oscar, although I haven't seen Oscar fight in 13 years. So, he's another question mark. But my gut tells me that Oscar's, you know, that, I mean, his talent level, like Holyfield, is through the roof compared to these other guys. But he's old, hasn't fought in a long time. I still would pick Oscar to beat any of these guys. Little worried about the size difference. Although if you got to come down to 85, it's not as bad. I still think Oscar wins until I see that he doesn't, you know, that kind of thing.
What's your gut tell you about this hybrid sport, we'll call it? Do you think we're in a phase, like a run of maybe a couple of years, and then that should be that? Or do you think there'll be more of this when you have YouTubers, retired boxers, retired MMA fighters, or maybe even other combat sports people, and other entertainers as well? That, you know, at the end of the day, promoters do seem to say, well, hey, there's money to be made here, so we're going to do it. So is this a phase, or is this here to stay, in your opinion?
You know, that's a really good question. I'm not even sure I have an answer to that. I think that as long as there's money on the table, they're going to continue to do it. I think it's fun for people. I think the broadcast, the telecasts have been done well, and they're entertaining. I don't know. I think people like seeing stars getting in the ring, throwing punches at each other, whether that's a YouTube star or a retired fighter, an MMA guy, former MMA guy. I think people like it. So I kind of think it's going to stay. And they've always had goofy fights and, you know, and fighting, you know, periodically, you know, for a long, long time. People like gimmicky things sometimes. So my best answer is we'll see. But right now there's a ton of money on the table and they're taking advantage of it.
At M Rosenthal underscore box, folks, if you want to follow him, when you, and you should follow him, I should say. Well, okay, let me phrase it this way. We kind of hope that it does stick around as long as we get maybe one per season, you know, like one in the spring, one in the summer. I don't know if we can handle any more of that. I could be fine anywhere between 2 and 4. That's what our audience is telling us. A few people are ragging on it. Ah, no, I'm done with it. Others are enjoying it. Our traffic does well. What about over on the boxing side? Does your audience want more of it? And what is your palate? What can you handle in a year?
I don't mind a couple fights a year. I'm on the same page with you there. I'll be honest with you, though. I don't think that these things resonate too much with my readers. I really don't. I don't think that people care too much about Jake Paul, for example. Some do, but I think, you know, Manny Pacquiao, the numbers go through the roof. Certain guys just do really good numbers. You know, Jake Paul's not one of them. Certainly the MMA guys aren't, because, you know, a lot of boxing fans, I think like a lot of MMA fans, are sort of territorial. They just don't care that much about the other side. But maybe the more they see, the more interest they'll be on both sides. Maybe both sides sort of benefit from this. So I'm with you anyway. Back to your question. I'm with you. A couple times a year is fine with me.
Michael, do you feel like guys like us, right? We were from a certain generation. But when you look at Tyron Woodley and Jake Paul fight, when you look at the crowd, there's a young audience out there. Do you think boxing has benefited in any way? Have any of those extra eyes, do you believe, will stick around and maybe give some of the actual real boxers a shot in boxing cards and order the pay-per-views? Will it transfer over at all, in your opinion?
I'm kind of guessing when I say this, but I really don't think so. I think it's, especially with those, I want to say kids, especially with those fans, it's about names, you know, Jake Paul and Logan Paul and, you know, guys like that. And I think once those names go away, I don't think they're going to care. I really don't. You know, boxing's always sort of been driven by personalities, big personalities, the big star in the sport, Oscar De La Hoya, Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao. Even for boxing fans, that sort of drives the sport. I think with these fans that follow guys like Jake Paul, I think once they're gone, I don't think they care that much about boxing. They're just into the event.
Jake Paul had a list of people that he wants to face. On that list was a guy by the name of Canelo Alvarez. When it comes down to money, is there any possibility that this fight could ever come to light?
It doesn't really make any sense to me from Canelo's perspective. I mean, he's making a fortune without fighting Jake Paul, and he would be heavily, heavily criticized. Plus, I don't think anybody would sanction it. I mean, that's like, yeah, Jake Paul, that's like committing suicide. I mean, it's a ridiculous matchup. I mean, it's like jumping off a cliff for a few million dollars is kind of what he's doing. But who knows? You know, when you're talking about seven figures, you're talking about maybe eight figures. Guys do crazy things. You never know. It doesn't sound like Canelo Alvarez to me, but I guess anything's possible, but I don't expect it to happen.
I really hope Canelo doesn't do it. I don't think Canelo needs it. I don't think boxing needs it. And it would not be fair in any possible way. I knew Floyd could carry the bigger brother, Logan, who's definitely weighs over 200. I knew something could happen there, and he could carry him, and no one would get hurt, but Canelo would hurt either one of the Paul brothers. That's
no question. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a ridiculous matchup. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Michael, for jumping on here on MMA Junkie Radio. And we really appreciate it. And again, hopefully we can lean on you for some of these big boxing matchups. Our audience is really, really a little bit more open to boxing, I think. So maybe there has been some sort of a benefit to these hybrid cards, because I see them tweeting about some of the big matchups that have been taking place. So again, thank you. And thanks for always helping out here with the show.
Great to be here. My pleasure.
All right. Take care. We'll see you. All right, folks, give him a follow again on Twitter at @MRosenthal_box, and check out Boxing Junkie, which is part of the USA Today sports family. Pretty simple, boxingjunkie.usatoday.com. All right. So goes, you know, it's cool to see a purist like Michael Rosenthal be open to what's happening, covering it fairly. I think that's one thing that we've kind of improved on in the last year. Like the first 6 months, I felt like we were all clowning. Now we're all asking the serious questions and breaking it down, you know, like it should be. And we'll see what happens. As long as each show kind of delivers some compelling athleticism, prize fighting, then I think I think it's here to stay in terms of our coverage on the MMA Junkie side. And for them, I feel like the boxing side's a little bit more of purist driven, but I also believe it's a sport that's watched by an older generation. So I don't know. I don't know how long they can hang in there because they're not watching high level. I mean, it got ugly at times in Paul Woodley, but it was competitive. And so, you know, that's why I think it worked.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how long they could put up with it, though. I think the Pauls can carry it, but I don't know that you could just grab someone else and do the same thing and get the same result. But, you know, Evander Holyfield, it's so strange because, like, at first I thought Evander's going to run through this guy. Then I started to think, well, he is pretty old. Notice I didn't say older. I said, he's old, man. Like, he probably should not be doing this. Mm-hmm. I agree with Michael in muscle memory, especially if Vitor Belfort wants to keep that fight. If he plays Evander's game at all, I mean, we've seen some high-level boxers play Evander's game and lose, right? If he can keep him at a distance, I think he can do fairly well. But, man, Evander's the king of that phone booth fighting, just up close, getting nasty, driving his head. I mean, look, that's what drove Mike Tyson to bite him, was the head being driven into his face. He felt like he was being headbutted over and over. He's going to do that to Vitor unless Vitor has the correct strategy to stay out of that stuff. And when you have another high-level boxer on the other end, it's easy for them to make that adjustment. Oh, okay, I've done that before. I have 42 fights. I've trained for that type of guy before. I know how to do that. When you have a guy like Vitor Belfort who trained for one particular person, which is the only guy he's ever fought at this level, I think it's a little difficult to learn all the adjustments you would have to make to fight Evander Holyfield in a short amount of time. So I really don't know what the hell is going to happen.
It feels like when an actor's told, we only got one shot, we got to get this one right. And so Vitor's going to go out there. He does have some experience. It's not like he's a submission grappler trying to box. He's a guy that used to box, not at the level of Evander Holyfield, but is familiar with it. He's a guy that's, you know, fairly always competing and staying in shape. So we can't play the card of he's 59. He hasn't fought in 10 years. None of that. I mean, he's kind of been active mid-40 guy. But this is still Evander Holyfield. And he's right, man. I didn't think of it. Why should we count on the open workouts being kind of like what we feel like how the fight may play out? I mean, Chuck Liddell gave us a warning. Like, did you see the way Chuck was? Remember when he was hitting mitts with McKee, something didn't look right. And then we all thought, well, but that's not the fight. And then came the fight and he didn't look like the Chuck of old. And then we've seen other people that just, you know, like Takanari Gomi before Pride just goes in there and boop, 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 you know, kind of like he wasn't into it or lacking energy. And then he had one of the greatest fights we've ever seen here in Las Vegas against Nick Diaz, albeit he lost, but still, you see Nick Diaz's face at the end of the fight. I mean, anyway, I don't know where I was headed with this, but I guess my point is the proof's in the pudding. We got to watch it. We'll see. And we just got to make sure that we compartmentalize and know that this is 59-year-old Evander Holyfield, who hasn't fought in a long time, versus 45-year-old Vitor, who's been fairly active. Did that tip the scale a little bit? I don't know. I've been trolling a little bit. I feel like it's Vitor all day, but after listening to Michael, he's so right. Like, and so are you. I mean, Evander's just bigger and he's super smart. And I think he's going to do some close quarter fighting that I think is going to frustrate Vitor. I know what I was going to say was, if it wasn't someone who is so disciplined like Evander Holyfield, then maybe Vitor would get a few different shots. Like, I said in acting, sometimes they go, we only got one shot. Like, let's say it's a stunt. They got to get it right, you know. And so I think that's something along the lines of what Tyron Woodley, you know, was able to do was Jake Paul. If that had been anybody else, he may have been done. But Jake Paul had a chance to make a little bit of adjustments, even though he was winded, even though he was hurt, because he was up against the guy that didn't make him pay, you know. And I don't know if Vitor can make Holyfield pay. I'm not sure. So we'll see. You know, we'll see how this goes. I think the boxing guys can have a – here's what I'm trying to say. The boxing guys can have a bad day and still win. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. But and another thing you got to take into consideration is there's a difference between being in shape and being in fight shape. That's why they have fight camps, right? So Holyfield could be in somewhat decent shape, but I don't know that's the same shape that he would have in mind to go however many rounds they go, you know, 8, 10, 12. That's a different mindset. You right. see what I'm saying? So, like, maybe he goes out there thinking, I don't have the cardio to take this into deep water, so I'm going to try and finish him early. That's not necessarily the Evander Holyfield we all know. He got a knockout against Buster Douglas early, right? But he didn't really fight that type of fight against Rick Bowe. He didn't fight that type of fight against Mike Tyson. So we don't know what kind of Evander Holyfield's going to show up for this fight. We know Vitor Belfort's going to be in shape. We don't know what he did strategy-wise, how much that affected him. Just think about in our sport, George, okay? If Vitor Belfort was going to face Michael Bisping, he would have certain coaches, certain training partners. But if you told him a week out, now you're fighting Jacare, think about how different that fight camp would have went. How different the strategy is going to be, right? That happened to him. Evander Holyfield and Oscar De La Hoya are as night and day as you could possibly get, I think. We don't know how he's going to react to this. So this thing could end up being the most boring thing of all time. They could go in there and knock each other around for a round and be done with it. Who knows? But the thing is, usually on these cards, I mean, I don't know how many people are actually tuning in to see Anderson Silva and Tito Ortiz, right? Yeah. Are there people that are tuning in to see that and just consider Vitor and Oscar as a bonus back in, you know, when that was the matchup, and now Evander and Vitor as a bonus? I don't think that there's that many people. So I don't know how this event's going to do, man. I really don't.
Well, how many people are just fans of this only? Like, MMA's not for them, boxing's not for them, but they'll see two famous people that aren't top of their game club each other for that type of an entertainment. You know, does that even exist? I don't know. Or does it mean guys like you and I that can keep it loose and fun and we're not traditional MMA purists, a few of those from boxing, along with the audience that I guess the Paul brothers have maybe created or whatever. I mean, no Paul brothers is going to be a part of this night, but Triller's kind of created a little bit of a circus act. In fact, have you heard anything about, is Triller doing anything like they did last time? Last time they had Pete Davidson pimping his mom. They had the Black Keys, Justin Bieber, Rick Flair. Like, have you heard behind the scenes what that's all about? Or all I've heard is the straight boxing, you know.
There was something to do with the commentary. I can't remember what it was, but I think that was going to be a little bit different. But, like, really when you break it down, it's so weird because people who know who Vitor Belfort is, who he is as a fighter, they might have still lived in the Oscar De La Hoya boxing era, where you could say, not only did I order Vitor Belfort pay-per-views, I ordered some Oscars back in the day. I'm one of those guys, okay? I'm exactly that guy. There aren't a lot of people, I think, that ordered Vitor Belfort pay-per-views that were around ordering Evander Holyfield pay-per-views. You know what I mean? Holyfield is the fan that followed him and the fan that followed Vitor are way apart. Like, I don't know really who it is that's going to be tuning in here. Now, when you get the former president of the United States.
Oh, God.
You add him to the equation, I can see people ordering it just for that. I think it's a brilliant move, but at the same time, who knows what that costs them, right? But as far as just watching, it's not like Holyfield and Vitor have beef. It's not like they were around at the same time where you could say one guy was the king here and the other guy was the king there. It's just two guys that are showing up to fight. So I don't know.
I forgot all about that. I was contemplating, do I even bring this up or not, you know, to Michael. I'm almost glad I didn't. But, yeah, I forgot. Donald Trump on 9/11. He's part of the commentating team. I guess, folks, if you want to know what we're talking about, Donald Trump and Donald Trump Jr. are part of an alternative broadcast commentary team. So you're still going to have the Triller commentary team, which, honestly, I don't know who it is. But let's say it was like, for example, last week's Mauro Ranallo and Al Bernstein. Do you all remember a better example is Dana White Contender Series a few years ago when it was, let's say, Brendan and Bisping. And then you had Uriah Faber and Snoop. And that was the alternative broadcast. That's what I think the Trumps are doing. And they're doing all four boxing matches from what I heard. Not even like he's dropping in to do the main event. And so obviously I think the big thing, if you want me to just pick one thing, the big thing is the historical significance of September 11th, you know, in our country. And the fact that a former president is going to be calling the fights, you know, if you happen to know anything about this subject, a lot of other former presidents honor the date, you know, and they have they're holding tributes, you know, at either the 9/11 memorial or different parts of New York. I know, if I'm not mistaken, I think Obama, Bush, and I forget, but anyway, so that's part of the flack, I think, that is part of this, you know. Now, that putting that aside, it just seems like a cheap pop that Triller's trying to get, because it's not like you can say Donald Trump is a boxing aficionado. Do you remember him in any way having some sort of a love, like Teddy Roosevelt, for example? He boxed, at least you could say. Is there any sort of a connection there, or are they just trying to pull in some sort of an audience on that day?
I mean, I think he is, because they would have boxing at the Trump Taj Mahal, right? Like,
yeah, I suppose you're right, to be fair. Okay. Maybe, but his presence was more of a, hey, I'm here, I'm Donald Trump. Not necessarily like we never really wanted them to put the mic in front of him and for him to break down a boxing match, right? I don't feel right. like he followed any of the sports that way, but. Are you going to get Triller? $49.99. Are you in?
There's college football. You know what, man?
It's at 7 p.m. that night.
I think I am. The reason that I'm doing it is because I don't want to miss out. I don't want to be the person that can't talk about it.
Is it almost, are you almost tuning into like a roast or a comedy show? Like, it'll be fun to watch it bit. Just so you can go on Twitter and tell jokes, basically, right?
A little bit. The first Triller, dude, I couldn't believe it. The first Triller, I thought I was being cute. I'm writing something on Twitter that's funny. And before I could even send that, something else was going on that I wanted to rewrite. And it for as much fun as we had, it was actually kind of entertaining, to be honest.
You can say something's a circus, but if you've ever been to a circus, when you walk out, you go, hey, the elephants, they were cracking me up, and the trapeze artist, and the guy that stuck his head in the lion's mouth, you know, I mean, circuses are pretty entertaining. They're just wacky, and you don't go every night, and sometimes you don't maybe tell everyone you went, but when you walk out, you're sort of entertained. That's kind of what it felt about Triller. Like, I actually kind of enjoyed it. There was a bunch of things I didn't enjoy, and it was fun to clown on it, but yeah, that's probably the reason that I would get it. It's part of our job. But even if it wasn't, I think I just don't want to miss it, you know? Now, that said, how much do you think you're going to flip back and forth between the Trumps and the other guys? Do you think in any way they can make it funny? Or in any way, I don't know.
I'll probably listen to all Trump, I think. Because this is a fight that I don't need broken down to me. Right. As much as I know is pretty much as much as they know, right? The commentators, yeah. It's not like you can go back 4 months ago. Oh, but they did watch that Belfort boxing match or that one Evander match. Like, they haven't fought in I don't know how long. Like, what more do they know that I don't know? I'd rather be entertained and laugh my ass off at whatever the Trumps are going to be saying. I think I might do that.
Yeah. Do you think of never mind. All right. What about your final predictions? I think I'm totally cheering for Vitor Belfort. Michael Bisping isn't, by the way. If you want to read about it, go to MMAJunkie.com. I'm rooting for Vitor Belfort. I know him since the Vegas days. I root for him as an OG of MMA and to still be doing it. Good for him. I have nothing against Holyfield. I cheered for him to get his gold medal in 1984, and I cheered for him as a professional prize fighter. So I really have no problem with him at all. I'm just, I guess, on team MMA. You put a gun to my head before the fight starts, I'd probably go with Holyfield. You could probably catch me, and I'd probably admit, okay, I've been goofing. I think Holyfield's going to win. But because that's not going to happen, I'm going to cheer for Belfort. I'm going to bet on Belfort. And I'll accept the result either way. How about you?
100% I agree with you. Part of it has to do with the fact that for a long time, I feel like boxing has gotten the best of MMA with certain scenarios, certain fights that you know a boxer's taken because, yeah, I know I'm off the floor with that guy. I think this is one time where things evened up a little bit with it being a guy that's just way older and hasn't really been active. So I think it'd be funny for us to maybe get one on them. And I think for that, I'll probably cheer for Vitor Belfort. But again, gun to the head, I have to go with the guy that's been doing this longer, that muscle memory.
Do I even have to ask who you think is going to win between Tito Ortiz and Anderson Silva?
Probably not. Okay. You know the answer, right?
Yeah. Do you think Tito Ortiz is going to risk himself in any way, or do you see him going through motions, and the minute he gets hurt, he covers up against the ropes until the referee intervenes and just waves it off?
I don't know that Anderson – I think Anderson's just going to dominate, but I don't think he's going to have the style to put Tito away.
Which makes it possibly more dangerous, right? I mean, if he can't put him away with one shot, he may just rat-a-tat-tat, and the other guy might be a punching bag for 8 rounds. I think they're going 8 rounds, 2 minutes or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll go 8 rounds, and I think it'll be Anderson Silva just hitting him over and over and over.
That might be more dangerous for Tito. I think Tito's one of his concerns are head trauma. You know, he's kind of avoided it all his life because usually he was able to get the best of people by taking them down and pounding them out. And when people got the best of him, like I said, he had this kind of pattern of the way he fought, and that's when things weren't going well. It was just some sort of a cover-up, and the referee would save him from taking more damage. So he really hasn't taken much damage. He's right about that when he says it. But I see him always bringing that with him wherever he may go.
Mm-hmm. His defense, really his defense, isn't really well-suited for MMA, let alone boxing. He does this thing where he just likes to put his hand over his head like this. Right. And he just lets you tee off. And that's just as bad, man. Especially with giant gloves like that, the pressure of that over and over and over, how many strikes you can throw like that. Ugh. I think he's going to get battered. Nothing in this matchup really favors Tito. Nothing.
None of it. The trailer pay-per-view starts at 7 p.m. Eastern start time. It's $49.99, and it includes Belfort versus Holyfield as your main event, as well as Ortiz versus Anderson Silva. That's your co-main event. And you can go to fight.tv, for example, if you want to order it. If you do it through the links that you see on MMA Junkie, that'd be great. So think about it. It's on September 11th. You got a few days to think about if that's what you want to do. I think Goz is kind of on the same page as me, is we just got to get it, not only because it's our job to talk about it, but I think it's kind of hard to, like, you don't want to miss anything. You know what I mean? So I can't fault anyone that wants to skip it either. I think I was a little more intrigued by Belfort versus De La Hoya, honestly.
Yeah.
But not by much either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, Dana White Contender Series. It took place, yesterday. We're recording on late Wednesday. our Thursday show so that you guys can get it early. And so basically this happened last night, I guess is what I'm trying to say. We had five contracts that were given out. And the winners for the fight contracts, well, let me give you the results of the fight. Chad Arlen Unlinger defeated Muin Gafarov. He was a plus 300 underdog, and he got the win via split decision. I cashed in on that. I told Goes, I'm just going to put something on the dog. If he wins, great, and if not, that's it. I'm not going to do anything else. So I won that one. CJ Vergara was also an underdog. He defeated Bruno Correa. Simon Oliveira defeated Jose Alde. Alde was coming back. He was putting it on him, and Alde was in live betting. He was like a minus 300 at one point, and I was going to bet the other guy because I could tell the other guy was more talented, but he was starting to get tired. He was starting to get hurt, and sure enough, he managed to get the fight on the ground. Oliveira did get his bearings back, and then he came back and won round three. He wins the split decision. I should have done it then, even though it would have been me betting a favorite. While he had underdog odds in live betting, I still would have profited, you know, on the underdog odds. But I didn't do it. I pussed, and that's that. Chidion Jikawani defeated Mario Souza. It was kind of a pick 'em. I'm sure some sites may have had Souza as a slight favorite, some in Jikawani as a slight favorite, and Josh Quinlan defeated Logan Urban. I want to talk about Njikawani. The Njikawani brothers are two guys that we've known literally for the length of our career here in Las Vegas. I couldn't be more happy for those guys. I knew Njikawani was 8 years older, which puts him at about 40, and I knew he was done unless he got involved in this low-level celebrity prize fighting that we're seeing. But Chidi just surprised me when I saw that he was on a card, but I was happy for him. But, boy, he had to pay the price, man. I mean, he got kneed in the nuts three times. Two were deemed fouls, enough to get a point taken away, but point or not, Souza had an advantage because he was a wounded duck at one point.
Yeah, that one got pretty bad. The thing about Chidi is, like, when he looks good, when he wins a fight and looks good, he looks like you got something there, right? But then he'll have, like, these just mental lapses where he'll have a fight where he just doesn't look that good. And this particular fight, it was good that he had to battle through adversity. It sucks to be in that position, especially two times. They weren't grazers or anything like that. Like, they were full-on shots. But you could tell once the fight hit the ground, when he took the fight to the ground, he was able to score more points. And I think it's a good story for those brothers. For the longest time, it was always Anthony that had fought in the UFC, and now Chidi has his moment. I think it's a good story. I like Chidi. I think he gives a great interview. I think he's a good fighter. But overall, Dana White's Contender Series, it's like, I'm a little confused. I don't know. It just hasn't lived up to what it's been in the past. And I don't think that's the UFC's fault. I just think things kind of just hit a home run the first couple times. But now this season's been a little slow for me. And I'm a little surprised that it's had the exact opposite reaction with Dana White and the matchmakers, where they're like Oprah. They're just giving things away. Like, I can't believe how many of these contracts, like, when I look back at previous seasons of people that were churned away, man, it just doesn't add up. I don't understand why they're giving away so many contracts.
Maybe they've lost a lot of fighters and they basically needed to restock. It's also a cheap way of doing it, of getting more talent in. And now that we've had four seasons, they're showing that some of these guys and gals that have come through the first couple seasons are actually becoming decent names for them. So it could be an economical thing. You know, I don't know, because they kind of can only do the same amount of cards every year. They're already maxed out at 42 or so per year. That means there's 10 weeks that the UFC just doesn't have a show. We know this one that's coming up is one of them. But other than that, they just seem to keep churning them out, and they go 14 deep on some of them. You know, maybe it's a way of not letting other promotions get those fighters and they just tie them up. You know, I don't know what the strategy is.
Could it be that the Ultimate Fighter had an effect on them? Because I would have loved to see any of those guys on that season compete on Dana White's Contender Series. That is a group of talented fighters that you no longer have access to. Could they have had anything to do with Dana White's Contender Series maybe being a little slower this season?
Because those fights were so great?
No, because those fighters aren't on Dana White's Contender Series. If there's no Tough, those fighters could have been on Dana White's Contender Series.
Are you saying you're seeing low-level MMA on Tuesday night so far?
Not low-level, but lower than what we're used to.
I'm going to pay attention a little bit better. I mean, we're watching from home as opposed to being there. But you might be onto something. Maybe that's it. And Joe Kawani, for example, is a savvy veteran. I was scared, though, because they kept promoting his black belt. And when he got him down, he seemed like he was slow in getting his game going and what he wanted to do. But when he threw that little soft elbow that caught him and then he came back and smashed, I was like, oh, wow, I wouldn't want to be on the bottom of that. Sousa's not a bad striker. He looked like he was getting some good shots in on Njokuani. It's just that he got a little out of hand with the cuff shots. The other guys, they finished them so quick that I feel like a few of them, they finished them so quick that I almost feel like I just didn't see it play out. So I almost have no opinion on whether they're high level or not. But I'll try and watch it a little bit more closely with those goggles on. At home, once you start opening up a drink or shoving food in your mouth or you get distracted by the other TV, maybe you don't watch as intensely as in the arena. And the arena is a lot better because everyone's kind of quiet. They're watching. And then you got media or fans next to you that you're talking about, you're summing up each round or whatever. So I think your level of concentration is better, but I'll try and fine tune that a little bit. I think part of the drama that's been left is that he's giving away so many contracts. So it sounds mean because I'm not openly saying send some of these losers home or some of these winners home with no contract. That's not what I'm saying. It was part of the part. It was part that was compelling. And maybe it sounds mean because some of these guys used to have their families there. So for them to win and still not to get a contract, that sucks. I do like the viewing parties at home. Not just UFC. I enjoyed it when ONE Championship did it. Sorry. Yeah, ONE Championship had one because I remember Nicolini's family being there. PFL had one. I can't remember if Bellator's had it, but I'm really kind of enjoying that a little bit. I don't know.
Did you have fun with it? If you had
a viewing party where I'm the fighter and I told the viewing party what to do.
You're the fighter. I think I might waste that opportunity and have fun with it.
Yeah, I think if a fighter's well prepared and their weight's good on fight week, then I think, especially if his team is creative, they should be having better ones. Now, I've seen some pretty good ones, but I'm waiting to see. Someone's going to knock it out of the park. Maybe just start with something simple, like, we're all going to wear black, kind of like the 209 crew, or we're all going to wear white, or we're all going to wear headbands, and the headband's going to have a hashtag, and maybe the hashtag's going to trend worldwide. I don't know. But I think people are going to start getting more creative with that.
I think I would have nobody under the age of 70. Everybody's got to be 70 and up, and I'm going to have them dressed in goofy costumes or something with beers and drinking. I would want my fight party to look ridiculous. I think I would rather do that than really get all my friends and family cheering. I think I would laugh at just people's reaction, seeing all these old timers with 40s in their hands and shit. Like, I don't know. You would have to tell me, come on, man, grow up if you're the UFC, because I think I would do something ridiculous. Have clowns in the background juggling. I don't know.
I mean, it's live, so once they've gone to you once, especially if you win, they're going to show it. As long as nobody's doing anything obscene, I don't think the UFC would pan away from it. As long as you're not holding up a swastika, a naked chick, or doing anything, I think the UFC would allow clowns on unicycles or people doing a do-si-do or a rave in the back. I don't know. So I hopefully some of these fighters get creative. But this is when I wish Tom Lawler and what was his homeboy's name? Seth what? Petruzzelli?
Yeah.
If they were coming through, I could see them maybe setting something like that up back at home.
Have a fireplace and just a bunch of Wall Street Journal papers or something.
Exactly. All right. Or you know what would be funny is if it was clear that there was like a mom or a dad, and when they announce that he wins, they toss him with Gatorade. Mm-hmm. That'd be hilarious. Dana White Contender Series, 2 down, 8 to go. So far, so good. I think we're basically saying something like we'll give it a B so far. But there's still 8 more fight cards to play out. I think week one, really, the big thing was Laura Sanko and all the roles that she had. And then the 5 contracts kind of threw us off, especially when it involved a fighter that lost. But now that we've had 2 weeks and they all got in, now we're like, what's going on here? You know, we're still trying to judge. There's no UFC this weekend. There's no Bellator this weekend. There was a ONE Championship this past weekend. We talked about it on Monday. So we're not going to go too much into it. In fact, I'm just not really going to get into it at all because we already kind of covered it on Monday's show. So what's in the past, I think, has already been covered. And I even remember saying something like, you know what, the cards, especially the UFC card, you know, Aspinall and Spivak were the co-main event. And then from there, there was other fighters that we could talk about if they wanted. But I was more interested in talking about, you know, Roundtree and Bukauskas and the knee. And, you know, after that, I mean, okay, Molly McCann, congrats. You look great. Patty Pimblett, yeah, we might have a star, you know, in the works here. But this is the sport is cruel. And I think we're all slowly becoming MMA snobs. Talk to me when you're 4-0 in the UFC, and now we'll start to take you a little bit more serious. I'm seeing a little bit more of that vibe.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I've been that guy before, I think.
Yeah, that's what Tom Aspinall is now. He's 4-0 in the UFC with 4 finishes, and I think 3 of them are in the top 10. And now he's got Spivak, who was winning 3 in a row. And Andrei Arlovski, a former UFC champion. So those two, and now you can go, yeah, maybe we should give him Ivanov. Maybe we should give him Derek Lewis. Now we're starting to get more excited about Tom Aspinall. But when you go 1-0, 2-0, we're not just there yet. I don't think it can happen overnight. I saw a little bit of it with homeboy from Sweden who almost quit the sport. Hamzat Chimaev.
Wow.
And but, you know, it was because he fought 2 times so quick and he made it look so easy. And then he did what he did to Mirshar. And then he went away, you know. This sport can make you forget about a lot of things and a lot of people. It's all about what's on the horizon, what's today. And then we might or we might not remember, you know, what might be next for you.
So funny because early on when we covered the sport, it was so different. There weren't really – you didn't really build to matchups. They just arrived. Right, you'd have like a Chuck Liddell, and he's beating the hell out of everybody, and then all of a sudden Jeremy Horn would appear, right, and they just thrust it into the main event. Here you go, you know, eat this. Or you would look and you'd go, man, can Ricardo Arona come over from Pride? Like, just people would just randomly show up, and that was your main event. There wasn't really that much of a buildup. You didn't see like Tito Ortiz has won 5 in a row, and now he's gonna get like. They just showed up. They just told you what the main event was, why these guys are here. And you watch. Now it's like these guys are getting built up and we're watching it from sometimes from the beginning of Tough, sometimes from the beginning of Dana White's Contender Series, and then they evolve into more of a veteran, and then they finally get their title shot. But it's almost like sometimes that middle part we just don't really care about.
Well, you know, tell me if I'm crazy here, but it could be that fans evolve their fandom as well. Do you remember when me and you and a few of our friends went to the LA Coliseum to watch USA versus Mexico. And we painted ourselves in red, white, and blue. So faces were painted. We wore red, white, and blue. I'm sure one of us had a spongy number one. I don't know. But we were there. Or even back when you were in high school and when I was in high school, and you just went and you were a fan, you know, that was maybe chanting and cheering or whatever the case may be, apply it to whatever it was that you did, you know. And so you went on these road trips and tailgates. And then you go through a phase where you're like, it's going to be too hot. I just want to get there and arrive for the game. And I want to sit in the shade, you know. And maybe now I don't want to have all kinds of beers. You know, you have a whole other different concern, you know? And maybe now we're phasing into like, oh, well, yeah, I don't want to be down in the student section. I'll be up in my suite, you know, or I'll be up in the loge area. That's what Big Ralph tells me. If I'm not in loge, I ain't going. He doesn't want to deal with the misfits, the varmints, you know, all the people that are crazy in right field at Dodger Stadium. He's too good for that. You know, he wants to be somewhere else. So it could be that that's actually what's happened to us. Like we're fans of the sport. We love to see a good fight, but now there's certain things that we're picking at. Maybe it's the prelims. Maybe it's the jibber jabber, you know, the shoving on the stage. I mean, you and I haven't been excited about a weigh-in in a long time. Have you noticed that? Not just even the pandemic, just in general.
Were the old men from the Muppets up top?
It could be.
Just talking shit all day?
We never used to miss a weigh-ins, and now it's like give or take. Oh, dude, it's 115 degrees. I don't want to walk, you know, one hotel over to the next for a weigh-in. And before, I mean, we would walk 30 deep, you know, and get there and maybe even get there an hour early and be ready to see it. And I think it's because it's so many, they're just not as special. And so it's not as big of a deal. We've gone through these motions over and over.
I can believe
USC,
that.
UCLA, I'll watch it, but I'm not as excited. I mean, I would be on a Monday talking about the USC-UCLA game on Saturday, like yelling, talking shit. We're going to win, writing down who I'm betting, how much you want. All right, let's go. And now it's like, hey, don't forget USC, UCLA. You know, they're telling me that on Thursday night, reminded me because it's all piling up on me. So I think I've just evolved as a fan too.
A guy that I really admire is Nolan King, because Nolan knows just as much about the first fight of the night as he does the main event. Dan Tom is like that too. Those two knuckleheads, man, I don't know where they find the time, but they can do that for just about every card. It's amazing.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, those guys, they obsess over fight footage. Well, for one, it's Dan's job. He loves to do it, but it's also his job. And then he, of course, has his podcast. Quick plug there. Protect Your Neck podcast. I catch it on Apple Podcasts. Check it out. It's about an hour long, once a week, usually Thursday night or Friday mornings. Leave him a 5-star review. It helps the algorithm. And definitely, he will not be offended if you want to skip through an intro where he recaps the week before, and then he gets to the meat and potatoes, his breakdowns, or even if you're a little short on time and you want to speed to the end and just get the picks. So he's solid when it comes to that. Nolan King, his expertise comes from, he follows so much of the regional scene that I think he knows by the time they even get to Dana White Contender, who's who, who's doing what, all that stuff. And he's just young, has a fresh mind, and, you know, he's on top of it all. So two awesome members of the Junkie team there. Quick plugs for both of those guys. Hell, let me just finish this. At Danton MMA. And at MMA_Kings. I hope I got Nolan Kings right. I think that's his Twitter handle. Check it out. Anyway, they can do it, Goz. They love it. I can't, because it could even be that I get put off by someone that may have lost me some money.
Really?
Well, I'm trying to think. I see, I'm watching them, and I'm watching $2 signs fight. So when it's the first fight of the night, I'm watching $2 signs fight, according to who Dan Tom and my man Alsop told me to bet. And a few other guys on Twitter that sometimes share their picks. Well, that and me sprinkled in with a little bit of what I may know, especially if I know them from regional or something like that. So I'm watching $2 signs fight. And when it's over, I'm so focused on the next fight. Because remember, I'm doing live betting, pre-fight betting, and then we got a few props. I think I'm more focused on that and my money budget. Like, ooh, am I down 25 bucks or am I up 50 bucks? And what am I doing here and what am I doing there? Versus... wow, that's three in a row for Mr. X. He should be on the main event of the prelims next week, you know. And when he gets home to West Virginia to his gym, Factory Y. They're going to receive, you know, I'm not worried about the fighter and their personal life and what they're doing. I'm just worried about if they won or not. And then I go on to the next one. Now that changes after we get through about the first four or five fights, that changes to, oh, I remember him. He made me some money. She made me some money. Or that dude has a couple fancy KOs, or she has some great submissions. And we start graduating to fighters that have given me more memories. They resonated with me more because of their personalities. We've actually interviewed them multiple times. So I get to know them a little bit better. So they're more of a human and less of a dollar sign. But the early ones are just dollar signs. And I'm just kind of watching that to see what kind of a mood is going to set towards the top. And I think
that makes sense.
Yeah, that's kind of how I've accepted it, I guess. I'm usually when a fight card starts, I'm still just hours removed from being pissed that Man United lost, or happy because they won, or now plug in the Lakers, the Vegas Golden Knights the night before, the 49ers the next day, modern day football. You know, there's so many emotions that I carry as a sports fan into the weekends. And you can only care so much. There you go. Like Bellator 266, the only thing I know is that Piccolotti, Neiman Gracie, Alejandro Lara, they're fighting. They're all either ranked or just outside the rankings. And then your main event is Yoel Romero and Phil Davis. The rest, it's probably about 20 fighters. I couldn't tell you who they are. Even if you told me I got a bag with $1 million, just name one, I'd be like, oh, John Smith. I would hope that John Smith or Bruno Silva is on the card. Or Magomedov. I would hope that maybe these common names just happens to land.
I respect that you would even take a shot with John Smith. A lot of people would just take their fate. Why not? Take a shot. John Smith, you never know.
Let's see if I got close. I got it right here. Bobby Cerrone III is fighting Aaron Hunter. Pedro Juarez is fighting Socrates Hernandez. Abraham Vassal is fighting Albert Gonzalez. Travis Davis is fighting Khalid Murtazaliyev. Christian Edwards is fighting Ben Parrish. Grant Neal, who I know is Jeff Neal's brother, he's fighting Alex Polizzi. Saul Rogers, there you go, former tough, versus Georgi Karakanyan. Oh, that's right. Karakanyan subbing in for Piccolotti. Alejandra Lara versus Deanna Bennett. I got to watch that for rankings. Neiman Gracie has Mark Leminger and Yoel Romero versus Phil Davis. So when I read that, it's enough for me to just kind of think a few things and then say, see you on the 18th. When's the fight card? Let me see.
I could give you a billion names before I get to Socrates Hernandez.
See you on the 18th. There you go. And, you know, and I know it's going to be on Showtime, and I'll look at the time. If it's on, if it starts at 7, I'll start tuning in around 7:30. Well, maybe I will watch at 7. It's one of three TVs, and that's it. That's all I can give you. You got to give me a better card than that for me to really lock in, you know, and get the tweets going and get excited and parlays and all that. I'm only saying this because Bellator's next. I'm not picking on them. PFL's done that to me in the past. Last weekend's UFC card did that to me as well. And now sprinkle in your Invictas and won championships, and that's it, you know. Do you remember when Invicta had Julie Kedzie, King Mo, and Mauro Ranallo, and they had Nama Yunus versus Tisha Torres, you know, and Paige Van Zandt, I believe, was fighting on their cards, and, you know, a lot of the top female fighters were fighting at Invicta, and it was all the rage, and Stitch Duran was there. It was popping. Now, what sucks is the UFC created the women's division and basically brought over all of those fighters. And so Invicta kind of had to rebuild. But during that time, I slipped out, and it's hard for me to get back in there unless they build new stars. But they don't have time to build new stars because there's not as many female athletes in MMA. And when there are, Bellator and UFC gobble them up. So kind of sucks, man. It kind of sucks. Now, that said, if I'm sitting at home and you go, hey, what are you doing? I'm sitting at home. I'll be back in 10 minutes. I'll be by in 10 minutes. We're going to Invicta. It's down the street. I got some tickets. I'm in. Yeah. Because now I'm watching it in person, and that's a little bit different. But as a TV viewer, I'm different.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right. All right, folks. We're going to bounce on out of here. That is our Thursday show delivered to you Wednesday night. I hope you enjoyed it. We talked to Mike Rosenthal from Boxing Junkie earlier, and then we tried to jump in and around some of these topics in the sport of mixed martial arts. There's really not too much out there in terms of like new fight bookings or anything like that. The next big card in terms of UFC is a pay-per-view coming up with Alexander Volkanovski versus Brian Ortega, Valentina Shevchenko versus Lauren Murphy, Nick Diaz versus Robbie Lawler. And there is a UFC coming up. It's a fight night next week, but this week they're all off. So enjoy that weekend away from combat sports, with the exception of Triller on 9/11 this Saturday, Evander Holyfield versus Vitor Belfort. De La Hoya's already put something out. He's out of the hospital. Good for him. But obviously he won't be fighting, but he says he was in great shape and he'll be ready to go in December. We'll see. But anyway, again, enjoy the weekend and we'll talk to you on Monday. Go out there and be a champion.